I don't know if I want to sit here.
All right,
I can't mumble under my breath.
We're live.
Yeah.
I'll do
that. I could be in real trouble. Thank you.
Next, we'll do. We have called the honors. Let him come stand up here too. Okay, we're going to go ahead and start the meeting. Call it to order. We have a quorum now. Thanks everyone for coming. Good to go. So we're going to do short introductions and then we'll jump into the agenda. My name is Colby Henley, the chair, and I'm the Ward 3 representative. Alex?
Oh, I'm Alex. I'm Ward 1 representative. Alex Jimenez.
Gene Kaywood, one of my advisors.
Nicole Bell, city manager, right?
Eric Hahn, Ward 5.
I'm Brian Flagg, Ward 2.
Margo Garcia, Ward 6.
Brett Crownshield, City 2 Sun Transit Department.
Steve Spade, Sun Transit.
Chris Blue, TDOT.
Alan Benz, Tucson Bus Drivers Union.
Thanks everyone for being here. So we'll go ahead and jump in. First is approval of the minutes for January 6th. Any questions regarding those?
Just I saw some things that we said in the minutes that should happen. I hope they will be happening.
Okay.
Reports that we asked for.
Okay.
And with that, I move that they be accepted and that they're shortened form is really okay.
So we have a motion to accept. Eric seconds. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Next agenda item is call to the audience. Anyone wish to address? Nope. Okay, we'll come back around to the second one later. Next item is update from Transit and Other. So anybody wants to start with that? Chris, you want to start?
Sure, I'll start. So we had some good news on the Ronstadt redevelopment project front. The FTA completed its review of our proposal and joint development agreement and did approve it.
Yay.
So that is going to be moving forward. And I believe in looking at the project schedule, that happened ahead of time. So we're a little bit in front of things, and it looks like the next thing is for it to go into design, and that's going to be happening starting this summer over the next year.
Okay.
And we probably want to have Ann Chineka come in at some point in the coming months when there's enough material for a substantive update.
Okay.
I'll check in with her to see when that might be.
Okay, very good.
So that's some good news. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So regarding the formation of a SunGo system subcommittee, I did confirm that Diana wants that to be a subcommittee, not a focus group. Sorry for the confusion at the last meeting.
Is there really a difference?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, there is.
Major difference.
Major difference, yeah. We're still gathering some people internally to be on that subcommittee. Likely there'll be several folks from SunTran, including Todd Noble, who was here recently and presented on it, as well as a few folks from IT. Misty Ingram expressed interest. Are you still, you're still interested?
Yes.
Okay. As well as Eric Hahn and Suzanne Schaefer.
Okay.
So, we haven't fleshed out the scope yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think by the next meeting we should have that figured out, as well as a finalized list of who's participating. As far as I forgot to put it on here. Sorry? Yeah.
Last time we had a subcommittee, we had a TPF member be the chair of that subcommittee. I would recommend that practice would continue.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree.
So that would be a.
Yeah.
That would be
right.
Eric.
Yeah.
Like Eric.
Eric would be great.
Okay, I'll run that by Diana, but I think it's probably going to be okay. And I forgot to put in here TTF vacancies. That was not intentional. So I did forward to Diana 3 candidates. I have not heard back. So I don't have any updates there. Regarding the Teamsters serving on the TTF and whether or not that's allowable, we did have a brief meeting with the clerk and city attorney's office and discussed it, and I'm waiting to hear back on that. I have not yet received a formal answer, so it is being worked on.
Great.
And I hope to have an answer for you at the next meeting. That's all I have.
Is the updates, bro?
Yeah.
I got one.
Okay. Let me do SunTran, and then do we
sure.
have...
Sure. I'll be really quick.
Yep.
Just got a little information, and you're well aware that February 16th is the date that we put our new bid into effect, and there are some changes. There are some adjustments to... improve schedules. The significant change with this is the rerouting of 10 and 17. So 17 used to go, you know, Prince to Romero, and 10 used to go straight up Flowing Wells to Tohono, and at Flowing Wells and Prince we're switching the outer ends of the routes so that the Route 10, which starts at Ronstadt, will now go adjacent to our building, so people will have better access to the transit facility. And then 17 will go up to Tohono, which is nice because now 17 will have at least one terminus point at a transit center. That'll go into effect on the 16th.
Okay, Brian.
Well, last meeting, or was it two meetings ago, when those guys from the city came and gave us that report on GPLETs? The customary core team feels that that's a really huge, important issue. And so we're doing something that would be like the people's analysis of GPLETs and taxpayer giveaways. So on March 1st at the Capilla Guadalupe in South Tucson, Pam Powers Hanley is going to talk about GPLETs, basically. And you know, the city has been GPLETed to death, and you can see the effect of it in our what the old mayor would call revitalized downtown. We call it gentrified downtown. And so GPLETs have had a real lot to do with it, and in South Tucson it's just starting in, so we're trying to get a foot in and make a difference there. So one thing is, if you do a GPLET, one thing that's happening around the country is there needs to be a community benefits agreement that goes along with it, so that the developer has to do something. And the guys from the 4th Avenue, you know, they organize on 4th Avenue, so they don't get rolled over more than they have been. And they actually got a community benefits agreement, but it was only a traffic circle down there by Maloney's. And so we're hoping for way more than a traffic circle. And one of the things that we would do if we did a community benefits agreement in South Tucson is that the developer should buy, what, free bus passes for every resident of South Tucson, something along those lines. So that's how it ties into Tucson. And what's that thing called? Universal access? Well, that's what should be happening like yesterday, last month, a year ago, on that whole thing. It should be aggressive, and that could be the same kind of a thing with a community benefits agreement. So that'll be March 1st at 2:00 at the Capilla Guadalupe. And to kick off all the festivities, we're doing this party that I'm going to invite to you. Mm-hmm. And it's sponsored by Casa Maria, Tierra y Libertad and the Barrio Neighborhood Coalition. And it's going to be a big party in front of City Hall in South Tucson. On the 16th, and the former mayor, Mayor Ekstrom, and the current mayor, Mayor Tesso, are going to greet the crowd, and we're going to have a dozen different groups in South Tucson stand up and say what they do and who they represent and how they don't want to see the place gentrified. There's a whole lot of them will be kicked out, destroyed. So food for thought for this group, cool. As it applies to trans.
Right.
Yeah.
What's the date of that first meeting you announced?
March the 1st?
This is going to be the 16th. It's going to be a big, huge party.
This is the party, not the party.
And then that's March 1st, 2 weeks later.
And where is it again?
Capilla.
Capilla Guadalupe on the corner of 31st Street and 3rd Avenue.
Got it.
In the heart of South Tucson. Why, look at that.
Thank you, sir.
Question?
Yes.
I have a question for SunTrans.
Okay.
Could you explain what's happening on the Broadway as it's being, the lanes are moved around, how the bus is handling that?
Well, we're having a detour around where there's a stop, a reestablished stops. And so we have staff, supervisory staff, they're going to all the construction meetings to understand exactly what's going on at each stop. Some of the locations, AdVision's being required to pull the shelters out, and then we're going to have to establish temporary stops.
Because, yeah, I mean, when I was driving around the other day, I saw the bench, you know, over where it's supposed to be where it stopped.
Right.
And then the two lanes that are blocked off, or so, and then there's a little temporary stop in the one lane. This was going east. And so the bus stops in the middle of the lane going east as people run from the bench up to the bus and back, which is okay as long as the street's still there. But when there's this 20-foot trench,
it's going to be...
What are they going to do?
Well, we're going to have to relocate to where there's no trench. So you may have to push it up to an intersection where they haven't carved it out. So they're always going to leave something open. So each stop is going to be a different challenge depending on what's going on.
So how are we communicating that to people?
We should be putting well, there's two things. One is if we get advanced information, then we can put together strip cards and get them on the vehicles, or we can get signs posted at the bus stops. Sometimes what happens is that you don't get enough notice to get stuff out there and get prepared, and then we're playing catch up because the contractor either moves faster or they change their plans from what we understood. So what we've got one supervisor that is always working on the construction projects, who's out there every day seeing what's going on, trying to check and make sure that everything's like we had expected. So, but it's always a challenge when you've got a project.
So the bus riders really put at a disadvantage to this road construction stuff.
Yeah, it becomes a challenge.
You're such a diplomat.
I'm trying to be. We do a lot of complaining to others, especially when somebody's got to come, you know, it's like, really, you expect that pastor to crawl down 3 feet, walk across a 12-foot lane, and crawl out to get into the bus?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, those are some of the...
Who do you complain
and
to?
Especially when you're in a wheelchair. That's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. Well, what we try to do is they have construction management meetings, and so we've got a supervisor who goes to all those meetings, and when they're talking about, you know, we're going to work on this section of Broadway, these stops need to be relocated, he then goes out, looks at the locations, and recommends where we ought to move the stop to. Or they'll say, okay, we're having to rip these shelters out next week, so we're trying to make plans on where to move the stops. And then the issue is, are they able to accommodate what we need to make the stop safe and operable, in our opinion? Sometimes it works, and sometimes we have to go out and renegotiate. And sometimes the people in the meeting say it's okay, and then you get out on to the construction site, and the people that are putting up the barricades or, you know, marking things out have a different idea. So it's a challenge trying to, what you can imagine. Yeah.
So is there any thought of just taking the bus down on a parallel street?
You know, there's just so much demand along Broadway.
I don't know
where you'd be. Yeah.
Well, envisioning this 20-foot, you know, it's going to take 10 months to build that likely blank storm sewer from Euclid up to wherever it's going. And that's a 20-foot deep trench. So it isn't going to happen overnight.
Right.
And I guess they can suspend a cable walk over it or something. I don't, you know, put metal plates over it or something.
Well, what they'll do is stage the construction so that they're leaving intersections open.
Yeah.
So you can get one way or the other. And so what we have to do is make sure they leave enough room at the side of that intersection that there's safe access for pedestrians. And then they'll come back and they'll redo part of the road and then they'll rip up the intersection. And it's just a matter of making sure they stage it right.
Yeah.
And again, you go into these meetings and they're not only our needs, but there are lots of needs they're trying to juggle. We just, Carlton, the guy that goes, is pretty good at
standing up for us.
Yeah, he's pretty good at raising hell.
Good.
Yeah.
Because the one I'm looking forward to.
And he's really good at following up afterwards and saying, this isn't what we agreed to.
Yeah.
So you need to do this.
Because there's going to be a where they're going to build, I don't know what you call it, a storm vault, I guess it is, a stormwater vault.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is going to go all the way across the road. It's going to be 12 feet deep or yep. something, 15 feet wide. You know, it's not only going to, it's going to affect the buses, the bicycles, pedestrians,
yep.
and the cars.
Yep.
And I'm anxious to see how they manage to stage that one. It's going to be interesting. All right, well, don't let them get away with anything.
Well, we'll try.
Bus riders have rights.
That's cool, bro.
Including yeah. safe play ways to get on the bus.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
I have a question.
Contract.
Well, you know, the latest I heard is that they're telling Ambition to take the shelters out of the Ambition.
Hey, Colby?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
When do we ask to talk about things in later meetings?
For the following agenda items,
yeah.
yes.
Okay.
Yep. yep. Number 9. Yeah. Make sure we have time for that. Okay. So the book, this came in. If you'd like to read it, I would say I've read through it. It has, if you've been at this meeting or anything for a while, it's nothing earth-shatteringly new. It reinforces a lot of what we talked about. But just some good ideas, and just to kind of help promote the idea of buses being the workhorse of a good city and good transit. So there's that. These are donated. So enjoy.
By an anonymous donor.
By an anonymous donor, and read, and then pass along as you see fit. I've reserved a handful of copies to potentially get into the hands of some mayor and council people that might benefit from reading them too. So we'll see how that goes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Cool.
Enjoy. Next item is the Transit Safety Enhancement and Human Trafficking Awareness Public Safety Initiative Grant. Whew, there's a lot going on there.
There's two things on this item. One is the grant, and then the other is just making you aware of some of the changes that are coming up in the system security. And I thought maybe I'd talk about the changes in system security first and then maybe follow up with the grant.
Okay.
So we we did this security analysis maybe a year and a half ago and came up with a number of recommendations and including changing our fare policy, doing de-escalation training, cleaning up the transit centers. One of the other things that we talked about was improving and expanding our security to deal with some of our interactions that we have with customers. We, as part of that analysis, we recommended that we ought to have transit cops, actual real life official policemen that work for transit. So we had our own police force with arrest powers and all that. There are a number of barriers to make it difficult for that to happen. Probably the most significant is the fact that TPD, who would have to hire and train these officers, are already short-staffed. And so they have trouble filling a spot for us when they've got their own
yeah.
trainings. So while that's still our preferred method, and I think long-term, I think we're better off if we actually have, gun-carrying, car-driving police officers that are working solely for transit. What we've done is had to modify some of what we're doing in order to improve our security. The other thing that we've looked at is we looked at our where we're using our security folks, and we don't know that they're deployed in the best places. We've got a security guard at our north yard, but we recently put in vehicle activated gates, so we really don't need a guard standing
to make sure
the arm goes up and down.
I've been there picketing. You don't need a security guard there.
Right. Well, you're right. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense
to
have an arm going up and down.
Until the strike happens.
Yeah. So we thought what we ought to do is reallocate those resources. And then the other thing that was going on is that we were using off-duty police officers for a period of time in the afternoon. We had a couple challenges with that. One is that that's not a time of the day we really have a lot of issues. And the police department, because of their manpower shortages, was having trouble staffing it. So about 25% of the time they didn't show up. So what we did was took a look at how do we realign our security knowing we don't have police officers. We talked a little bit about community service officers in the police department, and there's a lag in getting that done. So realizing there was not a lot of assistance there, what we did was talk to G4S about expanding their services. And what we've done is change the hours at the transit centers so that at Ronstadt and Laos we'll have G4S on site from 1 o'clock in the afternoon until 1 o'clock in the morning.
We already have them.
Right. And then,
but
yeah,
not that then, long of a time, huh?
Well, we had PD coming in until 6. And the other thing that we're doing is adding a roving G4S officer. So this would be an officer in a car who has radio communication with our dispatchers and our supervisors, who will be moving from transit center to transit center and working to patrol our problem bus stop locations. We've got about 20 that tend to have issues. So we can use this mobile officer now to assist at transit centers, to patrol these shelters that have issues or bus stop locations that have issues, and help operators and supervisors as we have issues. And that mobile officer will be in a car weekdays from 1 p.m. until 1 a.m. again, so that they can help support. And then when there are events, we may shift the hours a little bit. So like on Saturday night, if there's a lot of stuff going on, maybe we push them till 3 in the morning. The other thing that we've done recently as kind of a test is extended G4S officers at Ronstadt from midnight until 4 a.m. And that's really been helpful with issues of vandalism, things that have gone on late Saturday nights and stuff like that. So we may actually continue that. So those changes went into effect today. So our mobile officer is now making the rounds. We're going to watch what happens, and then we'll be meeting with them periodically. We're going to meet with the Teamsters to talk about how this is working, if we need to tweak the hours a little bit or add additional resources. But we're thinking that this will really go a long ways to increasing our security. We'll continue to have discussions with PD. We did just sign a contract with G4S through September 30, but if there are opportunities to work with PD to expand what they're doing, we're all for it, whatever we can do to make the system safer. So we'll give you periodic reports.
Can you tell me, are these G4S folks, are they armed?
No.
Okay, so they're just response and be able to radio if they need that kind of.
We have orders on, they call them orders on things that they can and can't do.
Okay.
So for instance, the G4S officers can tell people to move on, to get off our property. They can enforce our rules. They can assist supervisors. They can obviously defend themselves if needed. They cannot tell a bus driver where to drive or where to go. They can ask a driver to carry a passenger has been an issue with, but they can't tell our, only our supervisors can direct what the operators, where the operators are to go if they need to go somewhere.
Do they still get paid minimum wage, those guys?
No, I don't think so.
They didn't get paid very much. Like those guys, they're the same guys that are running you in and out of City Hall, you know.
Right. Yeah, the same guys.
4GS.
One of the things we've talked about with them is, you know, we hear good things about G4S and then we hear criticism of G4S. And we were really straight up with them when we said, look, if you're going to do this, we need qualified people. We need people who are going to do the job. And if they're not doing the job, then they're going to be gone. You can bring somebody else that does the job. We need your support. We're not here to occupy a seat in the booth. So
they laugh at you? Or?
No. I mean, they're serious. They want to do a good job. The one of the roving officers is the guy that's been one of our fair enforcement officers on Sunlink, and he's really, really good. I've watched him in action. I've watched him de-escalate situations. Mm-hmm. I've watched him rouse somebody trying to ride free and do it respectfully.
I get a raise.
So I think
give him a raise.
I think they'll do a good job.
So currently this goes through September and then that contract ends and then kind of reevaluate.
Well, we're going to reevaluate on a monthly basis. And what we've said is that, you know, if we need to change our hours up, are you willing to do that? And they're willing to do that. So
I would just add, in the meantime, we're also working with PD so that by the time this transition period ends, we'll have a system in place to use service operators.
Okay.
Right? And it just takes some time to get enough people on board to
the system.
Right.
Doesn't everybody want community service officers, though? There must not be enough of them to go.
They're popular.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are popular, and that's what's going to take time. Right. But it'll be the same type of people as the G4S folks, right? Mm-hmm. So it's also possible that they might want to come over and employed by the city. I mean, I don't have any sense of how that would work or any of that.
Well, actually, it's kind of interesting because that's what's happening. Okay. Some of the G4S officers are going over to taking jobs in community. So they're, you know, part of the issue is where are you getting your good people? Mm-hmm. How do we work together? And I suspect if there's a blend of the two, just making sure that it all works.
Cool. Well, that leads into money. And so this security seems like it would be a significant chunk out of the budget of the city in general, out of transit. So how do these changes affect the city budget, which is budget times upon us.
So, Brian, we're actually reallocating our existing security budget to, we're just kind of rearranging the deck chairs. It's not going to, the cost is not going to go up because of what we're doing. We're saving money by not having somebody at the transit center for 8 hours a day.
Well, real cops are not having anybody at the North Yard. Right?
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Very expensive.
Yep. But it's also really important.
So it should be less of a, you should be putting out less money than if you're not paying real cops and you can pay these guys, right?
Well, the bottom line is you can get more hours of G4S service for the same
hours,
thing we were paying for cops. The question is, can we get the same level of security that we did with an officer?
Well, or anything near
that's what we're working on.
In the past, does the city like ever allocate money that would go towards safety for transit centers or anything?
Oh yeah, I mean the transit budget is city money, is the city budget. We're managing that, and so the city budget is supporting. You see what I'm saying?
But additional resources beyond what they give you.
Whatever resources there are for transit mm-hmm. are in the transit budget. Now, one of the things we are working with is we've been talking about how do we coordinate what we're doing with what parking's doing? How do we work better with PD to get these officers? So that starts to take a look at some of those efficiencies. Mm-hmm. But one of the things we found is that when we have people at the transit center, like at Ronstadt, we really can't have them there for 20 minutes and then walking through a parking area for another 20 minutes. We need to have them there
dedicated
to help people because of the number of people and the frequency we're having. And parking is having some of the same issues that, you know, they need pretty constant. We're keeping these folks all busy. But we're working on how to make it all work more seamlessly. So, yeah.
You said the shift is from 1 p.m. to 1 a.m. Is that one officer working 12 hours?
We have two. Their jobs that are shared. So, for instance, the roving officer are two people working a 42-hour week. And I think one's working the first 3 days of the week, 3.5 days, and then the second working the other 3.5 days. Okay. Yeah, but they're working 12-hour shifts. Except for that middle day they share.
Okay.
So, and that way we've got some consistency. We'll have the same officer Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and half a Thursday, and the other half a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So the grant, I think you all know about 8 months ago we applied for a security grant to the FTA. And the grant allowed funding in three areas. One, and the primary focus was on stopping human trafficking. And then the additional focuses were assault prevention and then training on how to deal with homeless individuals, the homeless population, so that make people more aware of kind of the issues that homeless people face and deliver some or grow some form of empathy so that you're working with different populations.
Maybe you should have add training about all those drunk college students that vandalize Ronstadt on the weekends and stuff like that. Because you can't blame everything on the homeless.
No, I didn't, but I said there are different issues in different populations. And we do have, you're exactly right. It's not just one group of people that cause our problems. So, but according to the FTA, there are issues. So a lot of folks have post-traumatic stress syndrome and other issues that we may not have properly trained our staff to deal with. And so we can get training on how to deal with those kinds of things. So, but again, the primary focus on this was establishing efforts to deal with human trafficking. They found, they did a program a couple, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, they recognized that transportation has a huge issue or a huge connection with human trafficking, and they did a program with the Interstate Trucking to educate truckers and trucking firms on how to recognize issues that might be human trafficking and then how to come to assist or notify folks of potential human trafficking. And it's been really, really successful. And so what they're doing now nationally is looking to take that same idea of training professional operators to recognize human trafficking situations and then train them how to respond and then help us develop systems that can create safe places for people. So we'll be starting here probably in, we hope, this spring yet, offering training to all our operators and our supervisory staff, our customer service staff, and all the G4S folks on the aspects of human trafficking, how to recognize it. We'll be making sure that we promote buses as a safe place so that people know if they've got issues, they got a safe place to go, and then starting to work with PD and how we can report that information and track it. Yeah.
You know, I was at a bar downtown once and recently, and I thought it was really cool. I went to the women's restroom and there was a little sign that said, if you would like an escort to your car, ask the bartender for this drink.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, if you need safety getting away from someone you're with,
mm-hmm.
ask the bar. There is another code word you could use.
Right.
There were like three situations in which you could ask for support from the establishment to get to your vehicle safely. either with someone coming with you, with the police being called, or with some, there was one more thing. But that, having something in which you could discuss with a driver if you're in a situation, but you can't say that you are, would, I don't know if that's something that's common, or how that could be arranged, but that's an idea of ways.
Yeah, and one thing the training does, they help you learn how to identify human trafficking, because it's not always noticeable. And so they explain situations in which the operator might say, this is something I might suspect. If somebody's getting on and the person with them is not making eye contact, is not saying anything to anybody, always defers to that person. Those are the kind of things that they say, keep an eye, you know, if you notice something like that, report it, and then we can follow up on it. They tell you, you know, how to offer the buses a safe place and make sure that it's safe, and then how to make contact. So there are a lot of things that are really, I went through part of the training, and it's interesting when they were telling us about it, that situations that you think are perfectly normal may in fact not be, and that a daughter with her mother isn't always just a daughter with her mother. And those are the kind of things that they train you to look for. You know, we've had two, in the last 6 months, we've had two operators on their own independently without a lot of training have identified attempted abductions. Neither of them was happening on the bus, but the driver, in both cases, in one case the driver noticed what was going on, honked their horn enough that they spooked the person, and then got on their cell phone, called in a description of the car, and they found the person. In another one, we actually had a young woman, the video on the bus caught the, you could see young woman jump out of a car, run to the bus and get on and say, can you help me? Wow. The driver shut the door and say, you're okay here. So we do that on our own. So you can imagine if we got people trained with that, the impact that we can make.
Yeah, there's like, I'm not sure what initiative it is. I thought it was, so there's like the Safe Place. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think I've seen that on the bus.
We are a safe place. And so there'll also be a public awareness campaign that goes with this. Mm-hmm. And so we'll promote that the bus is a safe place. So if something is happening, get on the bus. We'll,
Hey, is it okay with you if I ask the Teamsters if they have any feelings about this or experience with it?
Yeah.
We're
all for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
And our drivers do a great job at that anyhow, but to give them the tools to recognize that, ways to signal us that there's something going on, could be it.
Well, I think the backup that you approve and appreciate and support that they're doing is also important, because they are taking some initiative which could lead to some negative consequences in certain situations. So I think that the Centran management really saying we want you to do this and we support you to do that is really critical, and so thank you for...
You know, so you're going to have 220,000? I mean, how do you'll do some workshops with drivers?
So
right?
we'll do. Yeah, we've got somebody coming in to do human trafficking training. We'll continue to do other forms of training. There's also money in there to hire additional security in the system.
That's good.
Again, so.
Well, then you can like bump up your F4G guys or your cops with
or pay
with
for
this.
Cop.
Yep. Yeah, like Chuck Huckleberry does on the Stone Garden. You know how he uses it for, you know, for humanitarian things.
Ah, so you lost him.
See, you guys will be like that. You'll be
taking federal money and using it locally.
Yeah, you'll be taking this grant money and using it for really righteous, good stuff that we need.
That's
security wise.
That's the idea. We want to spend somebody else's money to do it.
Is the grant renewable for the next fiscal year too, or?
Well, I suspect that there'll be future grants. This is interesting. They had $4 million dead, $2 million in two different pots. And there were so many applications that they actually took extra time to go out and find extra money. So they had $5 million worth of grants that they awarded to 24 different systems. So there are 24 systems nationally that got this funding to do different kinds of stuff. So if this is successful, what we'll do is try to find a way to apply next year, if there's more funding, to take it to another level. And it might be paying for more cops, it could be more training, something.
Yeah, because then you could save general fund money for bus routes and all that stuff.
Well, that's what we try to do. And this is a perfect example. If we can pay for two police officers with this grant, then it's two police officers we don't have to pay for as well.
True.
Under the assumption that you aren't able to get future grants, are you going to use this first one to train your trainers to continue the program?
Yep. So we'll have staff trained. We're also going to offer this to other local transportation providers. So we'll reach out to U of A, TUSD, Sun Shuttle, and other transit systems that have become statewide. Part of the idea is that we'll train our people to do the training, and then we'll offer, you know, through Arizona Transit Association or others to say, if you want to send people in quarterly, we'll continue to train. We'll train all of our new employees then as they come on. Yeah. It'll be an ongoing.
Good. Thanks, Steve. Very good. So we're going to move on to the budget discussion. Numbers, numbers, numbers. Here we go.
Did you? No, I apologize. We're still, so does everybody have a copy of the slide here?
Are you the budget guy for the SunTran?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, why you? You don't mind me asking.
Because in my past life, I was an accountant. So, no, I'm joking. I was an accountant in my last, but I'm the transit administrator, so I'm going to speak to the budget.
Okay.
I've been working with our finance folks and Steve and his team putting together the budget. And it's probably my favorite thing to do. It's like Christmas time for me. I'm joking. It's a bad joke. So
having fun.
We have been working hard on this budget, and we were, you know, we're working off the premise that we weren't going to get more money from the city this year. So we're having to look at every possible expenditure and sharpen our pencil and try to figure out how we can back into a number without cutting service, without doing some things. And Steve and his team have done a great job of looking inwardly and trying to figure out where we can save money. And so about this time, we're about $1 million over where we were last year,
over,
which is pretty good.
Over what? We spent more, $1 million more, or brought in?
No, we're actually on our projection. So I want you to look at a number. So look at fiscal year adopted, look at the general fund, $48.2 million.
So that's we're currently in FY20.
So we're currently in FY20. If you look at our projection, we're at 46.71. So we're projecting. Yeah, so let's look at the second column. And you see where it says fiscal year adopted?
Okay. Looking at fare box.
Right.
Regional IGAs.
Correct. Keep going
MTA,
down.
Others, federal grants, and then general funding.
So we adopted that budget last year where the city's investment, let's call it the city's investment, would be $48,275,390. Now, if you go two columns over, do you see where it says $46,715,470? Mm-hmm. That's the run rate we're at. So we're currently in there, and we're going to be getting. That's kind of where we're projecting to be at the end of the year. The end of this fiscal year being the end of June, right?
Okay.
So Steve and his guys and his girls are doing such a good job running it that we think that we'll actually be at a spend of $46,715,000. So
Don't you have to cut somewhere? Or do you have more revenues or?
That is the revenue. That is part.
That is, so we're projected not to spend everything. So they're doing a good job.
Wait, what? Why am I so confused?
So in other words, the adopted was $94 million total revenue.
That you thought that they thought that they would make, correct?
And they're only gonna do 92.
So then it's a shortfall of income?
No, it's not a shortfall.
Yeah, look at the expenses.
Yeah, you gotta look at the expenses. So if you go down,
mm-hmm.
And next year we'll have a better way of presenting this. Again, we're sorry, it's kind of convoluted. The fiscal year adopted budget, right, was $94,111,700.
Mm-hmm. Bottom line.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
Total expense, bottom line.
Total expense.
So we spend less than we anticipated.
Precisely. So we'll be at like $92,083,000. Okay. So.
Funny how that's the same.
I think that's right. So that's the fun part. So moving forward, we're having to build the budget, right? And we're having to look in every nook and cranny and try to figure out how we can save money, because there's certain things. The biggest part of our budget is going to be personnel and fuel. So
where does the fuel show up in here? In supplies?
Fuel is going to be under supplies, correct?
Yeah, because in that.
So here's the challenge we've got. We didn't replace equipment for a couple of years. And the downside of not replacing equipment is that our maintenance costs went way up, because we've got buses that have over 500,000 miles on them. We've got vans, cutaway vans that have significant mileage on them. They're very expensive to keep on the road, right, once they get over 200,000 or 300,000 miles. So we are replacing a bunch of equipment next year, and I'll give you the exact numbers. We've got 5 electric buses knows about. They're going to be coming online next year.
I thought we were told we were getting one.
We're getting one in March. That's the lease bus. But the other 5 arrive in the next fiscal year budget.
Wasn't that supposed to be a pilot program and then check it out?
And the city wanted to move forward and the council wanted to buy 5 more electric buses.
Yeah, but maybe that's not cost efficient. And maybe this group needed to like talk about that.
And maybe they're not going to work the way they think they will.
Yeah.
Well, that's too bad. You now have 6 buses as a pilot project.
Yeah, so
you're not Mike Ortega.
so we have the first bus arriving in March. That's a lease. Okay, so we can get out of it. If it doesn't work, or if it doesn't work up to what our specifications are, if we're not happy with it, we can turn that back in.
Well, we shouldn't get this in the budget for next year. We should discuss this beforehand. Isn't it a big deal to have 5 electric buses? It was only a few months ago when we sat here and the director woman told us it was going to be 1 bus, and it's like, well, is that just show, and is that just like a political thing, or is it really going
to? But you're forgetting she did also say they've applied for a grant to get more buses. That's what these 5 are.
And we also are only advisory to the mayor and council. Who made that decision?
Well, that's, yeah.
Here's the positive. The positive is that most of that cost of these buses is going to be borne by the MTA. So, but I do appreciate what you're saying, and we will take it into consideration moving forward, I promise.
What's most mean? Like,
well,
do you have an
80%,
idea?
85%.
So if the bus is $1 million, the feds are going to be covering between $800,000 and $850,000 of that cost.
That's awesome.
Now, the same thing applies to CNG buses. So we're buying another 20 CNG buses. Now, the good thing that's going to be happening when we get those CNG buses is we'll take diesel buses off the road. So there's 2 ways we're going to save money. We're going to save money on the maintenance costs, which are exorbitant, because some of these buses, we can get into the costs later and what it costs to maintain, and we're having to do overhauls on the engines. We're having to take off the diesel particulate systems and replace those. It's expensive. We won't have those costs. We'll have some of the overhaul costs on the engine with the CNG buses, but we won't have the diesel particulate filters that go on those buses because they burn cleaner, right?
Right.
The other piece where we're saving money is we're spending around $2.80 a gallon to buy diesel. It costs us 80 cents a gallon to run on CNG. So we're saving about $2 a gallon by replacing those buses. So we'll see some savings moving forward. The electric buses, we don't have data on what the electricity is going to cost, and we don't have that information yet. So that's partly why the pilot program is so expensive.
Well, that's why you do a pilot program, so you can figure that out. I mean, instead of just showing up in the budget.
We'll figure it out. I mean, I don't think it's going to blow our budget apart.
You got to be realistic, I guess, Brian. You got Council Member Durham who's
pushing
to get the whole fleet electric, which in my view is way premature.
That's kind of what I'm wondering.
I mean, in a sense, you like his vision. Because, you know, we ought to be going all electric at some point. But I'm not convinced we're anywhere near that point with full-size transit buses.
We are working on a white paper now to assess everything from environmental, economics, everything, take everything into consideration. There's not just costs of, people think, well, you can just install recharging systems. It goes way beyond that. You start pulling on electric grids and you're having to build other infrastructure. Right. Well, we're gonna bear the costs of that if we have to do it. So we have to take all this into consideration. Not only that, it depends on where you're getting your electrical power from. If it's coming from a coal plant, then you're not really helping anything.
That's right.
Then there's the aspect of your rare earth mining. To get the lithium, you have to go and you have to get that lithium somewhere. Well, if you're taking down mountains, then again, is it really environmentally sustainable? So there's all kinds of things we have to look at. We're building that way right now. But they're fracking already to get petroleum.
Then you're fracking and poisoning.
Yeah.
No, hold on. They're going to be fracking to get petroleum, right? That's what they're after. They're not after the natural gas. Natural gas is a byproduct. So I'm going down a rabbit hole right now, but I'll get back to the budget.
I've got a question. I'm looking at the top graph or the top table, and under expenses you have personnel, service. And the 50-20 adopted was 562 and the projected is 714. So that's quite a bit more than the adopted. But why are we looking at 714? Personnel service.
Personnel service. And we're looking at 714
as the projection when the actual is only 236 and the adopted was 562.
Okay, so the actual is 236, and let me look into that. That is odd.
What does that column mean, actual for 1 through 6?
So that's actual. Those are actual expenditures that we've incurred this year.
Up to this point.
Up to this point.
Well, periods 1 through 6, so it's essentially the end of December.
Right.
Okay,
exactly.
So where
right, because our fiscal year starts July 1, so this is like the first 6 months of actual expenditure.
Okay, I see. Mm-hmm.
And the next column is what we think we're going to spend in the next six, so that it's cumulative, right?
Mm-hmm. So it's not a strictly linear projection is what's interesting, is that they obviously have some expenses they know are going to be coming up in the second quarter,
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be. You take a look at where you are at the end of 6 months, and then some of them are linear. But also, especially the personnel services, I think this professional. So if you get a study going on, you're going to update your website, and that's going to happen in the second 6 months instead of the first 6 months. Those things are going to impact your costs, and I think those are some of the things that are impacting that jump in personnel services, I think. So,
and the capital projects is also
same thing.
Very low for the first 6 months. So
that's,
all
yep,
those purchases
right,
of buses are going to come
yep,
in that
exactly,
second 6 months.
Right. Yep.
Right. I have actually a question about that. So the capital outlay, so you're looking, your quarter two projection is just showing 1.7, whereas for the adopted was like 3. So am I reading that you're only going to spend barely over half what was adopted in the budget? Is there a reason that we're not going ahead and spending that money? And I guess that's tied to a second question. The million or so that you're coming in under budget, that's not actual cash you get to keep and roll over. So it seems like there's some incentive to spend it now.
Yeah, some of that's grant money. And so...
So it does roll over?
That money will, if it's grant money, it will roll over.
Okay.
I'll give you an example. We've got money in our budget, and we're actually we're going to put $400,000 in for designing a CNG station for the North Yard.
Mm-hmm.
We've only got a CNG station at price. An issue that just came up in the last couple of days is we need to add another compressor because the 20 new CNG buses that are coming online are going to need that capacity at price. I think it's, we didn't have that in the budget. So the problem being that we can't just on the fly take grant money and move it over here because it's got, you know, there's strings attached.
Yeah.
We needed to build that CNG station in the North Yard to accommodate the growth in the CNG bus fleet. But because of the electrical stuff that's kind of come up, that's put the kibosh on it, so we're kind of hamstrung. So part of the reason we're doing this white paper is to get support to build that CNG station in the North Yard, because we have grant money that will pay for the bulk of it. When you're paying 80 cents a gallon as opposed to 280 for diesel, it's kind of a no-brainer. Brian's right about, you know, maybe not jumping into, you know, pure electric buses because we don't know what the costs are going to be. So there's some challenges, right?
Do you have the grant money from the electric bus?
We have grant money for the buses, and we've put together an agreement that I know that Chris has presented regarding the charging station. TEP is running some of that money to build this actual charging station for the electric buses in the North Yard. The grant money I'm talking about from the FTA for the CNG station is separate. We can't just change that money and move it around. We can move some of it, but it's when you get into the fifth or sixth or seventh year where we're kind of at, you got to spend the money or it goes away.
Yeah, on that CNG plant or whatever you call it up there.
Station.
Would it help if, I mean, what's the holdup? And is that because the mayor and council declined to approve it because they want to go electric? Or is there some other holdup? And can we help by sending a letter to the mayor and council saying, look, you got a bunch of brand new CNG buses you're going to get anyway. They're going to be here 15 years. I mean, 12 years minimum, FTA, but realistically 15 years. It makes sense to build a plant. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, so you want to go all electric, but you can't do it overnight. You got to remember, you already got buses that you got to keep in service for 15 years.
Right, and we'll probably buy more. You know,
because you're not going to go all electric immediately. Right.
No, you're absolutely right. We would like to finish this white paper because we've got other agencies around the country that have gone whole hog into electric and they've had issues.
Yeah.
City of Albuquerque turned a bunch of them back in to BYD.
Never got their BRG line running because of that.
That's right, yeah.
Built all the infrastructure and there's no BRT going down Central Avenue.
Yeah, we're not anti-electric. We want to do what
you got to do it right.
Environmentally sustainable and what is not going to blow our budget up, right? We're trying
there
to balance.
You go. That's what I care
about. You can't
about.
Jeopardize
your budget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got the service comes first.
So then
riders come first.
Amen.
Right.
Today.
In the minimum, do these electric buses, will they be able to do a whole day's worth of driving without me?
That's part of the issue.
That's part of what we're going to be studying when the lease bus comes, because that's why it's coming in the spring, so that we can see how it behaves in the summer weather, because that's usually the worst time. So that's part of what we'll be looking at. If we see anything in that lease bus that we don't like, we can go to the folks that were ordering the buses on the grant, and we can go to them and say, hey, we're not liking this and this. Please put in new technology so that we can do better on, you know, whatever we're seeing that's not working, right? So we do have some options because we've ordered these buses to say, hey, this one that you sent us before has some issues. We'd rather you send us something, even if it means delaying a couple months, you know, to get us something that will work better, right? So we do have some options there. one of the things that we looked at as far as when we should put this CNG plant online was, when is it necessary based upon how many CNG buses we would have, right? And so that's why it had, was delayed, like from last year, was we weren't going to be quite at that point. Now we're starting with ordering these new ones, where in the next few years we could get to that point where we'll need it. So we're trying not to spend the money too soon and yet spend it soon enough that it's important. Whether that ends up being some of it for an electrical or some of it for a CNG, because we're not 100% sure until we start going through this study phase where we're going to end up. Right.
It sounds like for right today, for this year, like you need to take care of that CNG thing than the electric.
That's why we're starting the design for that CNG, right? But we don't, right this minute, need a CNG plant at the South Yard, I mean the North Yard.
We did our fleet replacement plan, we took a look at the capacity. We're at 68 vehicles now. We can go to about 106 CNG vehicles at the South Yard before we start to stress out the capacity, and that means the city's got a couple of years to make the decision on when to move forward. So there's some time to allow the city to experiment with the electric bus, see how it works.
And time is on our side right now to make sure that whatever we do build is the right thing. And that's what the white paper is going to cover. And so we're assembling a lot of different pieces to see where we end up and where we should expand.
And we're with, we're working with the Gilley Corporation. That's probably one of the two premier bus manufacturers in the country. So I don't think we're going to run into the kind of issues that Albuquerque and others have run into at UID. You know, Proterra's having some luck. So it'll be an interesting exercise, but I don't think ours will be quite as, I don't think we'll suffer the kind of challenges that Albuquerque.
We promise we won't blow up the budget. We're going to do this in a responsible way. We have, been acting in the best interests of trying to keep our costs down, so that we can provide more service.
So then, do we have an idea for, since we're talking about budget for next year, is the intent to stay at the same rate, increase it a little bit, decrease it, or kind of what's the thinking within the department for budget moving forward?
You mean like the cost of service to our customers, or?
I think they asked for the general fund. I think that's probably the big one they were asking.
If we have to get down to that number, it's still fluid. We're still sorting through some things. There's carryover. We have money that we can carry over from this year because we operated more efficiently thanks to you guys. That might buy this cost down a little bit. There's some other money that we're still looking at. Can we tweak routes?
Or cut service would be the way I'd see that. Like, can you comment on that?
We're trying not to cut service. But we have to look at service enhancements, we call them.
You mean cutting routes?
No, some of this is... You know, Steve calls it like straightening out a route. There's a couple routes we're looking at. We're still close. We may not have to cut service, but if we can't, if we can't get there, then we'd have to look at that.
So help me understand that. So Steve Kay's newsletter says that we have several, first of all, we're in a climate where our budget, we're not in the recession, we're out of that, economy's going well, we're going to have a surplus in our budget. I understand that bulk of that surplus is based on the fact that we've had a lot of missing staff and to rebuild that staffing. I would be disappointed if we're gonna be cutting our transit budget in this climate.
Amen.
And so I guess I'd be disappointed and curious why we feel the need to do that when, I think at the very least.
They're negotiating a contract you know, obviously for the operators at this point in time, I'm assuming that, you know, you're going to have people that are going to make a little bit more money, so we have to build that in the budget, right? Personnel. So there's not many places we can, in terms of trying to keep this budget number where we were last year, there's not, especially with us having to get new equipment and buy, you know, new buses, new sun vans, there's certain, you know, there's costs that are going up, right? We're going to have to spend more money in terms of capital outlay. I think it's 1.6 million higher. So I think we've done a pretty good job of bringing that number down.
And so I want to be clear that I'm not pointing the finger
at
you guys.
Yeah, we're not. We're just trying to get back to where we're trying to get back to that number of where the city's investment is close to what it was last year, right?
Yeah, and that's why I want to emphasize, I guess, is that it is an investment, and so is there a role for us to speak to our appointers and make the pitch for why that number needs to be.
If you can give us a couple of weeks, we can get to that finalized number.
Okay.
I mean, we're really close right now, right? I mean, I want you to understand, we have taken, we're spending $1.6 million more buying equipment, which is, you know, not a small number. It's actually like $16 million, right? But when you take the grant money off of it, we're down to 1.6 in terms of what the city's investment. We know we're going to have to increase our personnel piece. So where we're at right now is pretty good. I mean, give us a little bit of time here to finalize it. We're submitting the first draft today.
Okay. And so what I'm seeing is I see us as allies to help make that pitch to get that number where it needs to be.
But I think it's a little soon to ask because we're not at a point where we have a definitive. We've been looking at where were the efficiencies that we gained this year and how do we project those into next year and whether that's getting additional CNG buses and then that number is going down and how much of that year is
included in
that and all those kinds of other things that mm-hmm. go with running an efficient operation, right? And then we'll see with the increases that Rhett was talking about, is there an additional ask or do we think that our other
buses can come in
higher? And we're not there yet. We just don't know. But if you've got any ideas of where there are efficiencies to be had that don't inhibit our ability to provide service, then we're all ears too.
Yeah, well, we've done that, haven't we, Gene? Like we've turned it, we've trimmed the fat over the years,
well,
right,
in
bro?
In my opinion, the fat's been pretty well trimmed.
Yeah.
But even so, Brian, you trim all the fat, but you know it develops somewhere else. It's like there's always something you can look at to say, well,
right.
maybe we don't quite need to do that way,
right.
And we can save a couple of bucks. Yeah.
You know, along those lines.
Rampant right now in all the fields, right? So if there are ways that we're not aware of that we can make things work for less money, because we're really not interested in cutting service.
Yeah.
You know, right?
Yeah.
So. How long have you worked for the city? A long time? A year?
Three months?
Oh, 3 months. Well, here's the deal. Like the guys that you work for, your bosses officially are the politicians, the electeds, and they have gotten severe guff about a few things transit-wise, and that would be labor things. The worst thing that ever happened in modern history in this city for poor people was that goddamn bus strike that people suffered, and they finally dealt with it. So the labor issue, the fares, but that's locked in now.
We got that.
The fares going up. So the other thing besides the fares is the service cuts. And so I would say as you do this, my thing is that there really is transit constituency, and they know that, and they don't want to hear it. They want you to design something where we're going to be happy enough and shut up. And so the not cutting the routes is really, really huge. So and don't nickel and dime them the way they've done too.
I worked closely with the mayor in my previous life when I was in the private sector, and I can tell you she knows.
Great. Yeah, okay. She knows all this
and,
stuff.
And a lot of the good things that are happening in transit, she helped. Not just transit, but across the board, she is I think she's great.
Yeah, well, she knows what I'm
exactly
talking about.
Exactly.
So,
no, we're coming from the same place. You know, like I said, we're really close. I mean, for what we're doing with bringing all this new equipment online next year with this capital outlay, with, you know, we didn't even talk about RNG. You know, we've got Lowest of the Rail, Less Landfill. There's some stuff we can do in terms of
capturing.
We can actually technically capture those methane releases, and we can use that to fuel these buses. Okay, that actually is. Hold on, that actually is cleaner than electric. Okay, so there's some things
we
can do.
I know, that's the coolest thing ever.
So,
and the thing that's important to know about it is that we used to be selling that gas to Tucson Electric, and they're stopping buying it. So we need to find some place to put it. So
let me add one more thing, and I won't address the same one. When they're fracking for petroleum. Natural gas is a byproduct. If we don't use it for this and they're flaring it, that's the worst thing you can do. So if we're using it to fuel our buses or we're using it for anything else, that's actually a good thing, because they're not going to stop fracking for petroleum until
Trump's out of office.
So if we're using it for our buses, it's fantastic.
For future discussion, and once you do have the numbers, can we get like a breakdown of like a SunTran dream sheet or something like that? We know we want $1.6 billion for the new buses, the 20 new buses, but $400,000 for your new gas station. But what about if we get an extra $2 million, we're going to do 20 more bus stops or something? We get like a wish list of like that on top of it. So if you know, because last year the city put in $5.7 million more than it did in 2019. So if it's a total of $48,275,000, say, roughly, with your buses, your added improvements next year, that's $50 million. What happens if they give you $51 or $52 or $53 million? And what would we do with this? I mean, how would we improve the current system to get more people to want to ride?
There you go.
So that is that's the big question, right? That's the one thing we can, you know, if we could get ridership up, that would solve a lot of problems.
Is there any way, since everyone's operating essentially on the same pool of money, things like advertising and marketing for public transit, does that always fall under the public transit budget? Or is that something that can be gone under something like public health, or I don't know if we even have public health. I guess we wouldn't do some, but like, because there, things related to public transit have to do with air quality, you know, which is a public benefit to everyone.
Amen.
To have people riding less. And
right,
so areas where that sort of thing can get covered under something else, is that something that's commonly talked about when you're doing the budget?
We don't, you know, so we're not factoring in, as far as the budget's concerned, we're not factoring in, let's say, environmental externalities. I mean, we're trying to do things that are good for the air, right? Electric buses are good for the air, the CNG buses are good for the air.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever get behind one of those, you're not going to get that plume of diesel smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we've got diesel particulate filters, you still get some of that diesel smoke. What you bring up is a good point. I mean, but it'd be a fairly complex assessment to say, okay, this is, we're going to, because I think what you're trying to say is, if we're not polluting the area, then you're going to have less people, you know, maybe something that's lung related issues and going, is that what you're talking about?
Well,
yeah,
let me try to answer that a little bit.
Budgeting.
So, there needs to be a transit budget where we're providing information to people on how to ride the bus,
mm-hmm.
and why. And what I think what you're suggesting is, or one of the things is that when you look at Department of Environmental Quality or Department of Human Services, are there areas that could also help promote transit,
mm-hmm.
that kind of cross-pollinate?
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know, there are places that have done health assessments as they're related to transit, and so we know that transit leads to a healthier community by whether it's eliminating, you know, food deserts or providing better air quality or access to better jobs, all those kinds of things. So can we get people to help advertise the need or the importance of transit is supporting those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Really, my question wasn't answered. I mean,
you're talking about
your meeting. Can you say, like, we need $50 million from the city next year? If we
get 51 instead of 20 buses, we could get 21 buses, plus we could put 20 new bus stops. Is there like any numbers you can share with us?
You're talking about like a wish list. Yeah, I mean, we can certainly do some more forward-looking work in terms of putting that together. I think, you know, at this point in time, we're just trying to make this thing work and then get that put away and then look forward. So can you give us a couple months?
So, like, level one, this is what we have to have. Or, I mean, we're used to Pima County. We used to have level one budget, which passed in their dream list, which you might as well make paper airplanes out of.
So the long-range transit plan has some of that, that talks about where it sees the transit system growing over the next several years. One of the things that's helpful when you have a long-range plan is then you develop a series of transit development plans that are 3 to 5 year plans that tell you how to get there, which is like, okay, you know, during the next 3 years we ought to do X, and 3 years after that we ought to do Y. That can help do that. But, you know, they're part of the general framework is there when you look at that long-range transit plan. And then we also know from some of our public input what is on the minds of the public in terms of additional needs. For instance, when you were talking a minute ago, Brian, about the services, the other thing that we hear from people all the time is we need better Saturday and Sunday service.
All the time.
Yep. And so those are the kind of things that you, I mean, we can develop it. But that's also in the long-range transit plan. Think the need to expand that. So there's a framework.
Do you have to follow the long-term transit plan then, or you can't ask for something just within the city, or?
Well, the long-range transit plan identifies the needs in the city and in the region. So there are specific things they're talking about when they look down the road at the transit at the need for the growth of transit service. So you can pick the things out of there that make sense and start talking about what are the near-term things and what are the longer-term things.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but I think what Eric is saying, we'd like you to do that.
Right.
And that would be my, I can't make a motion, I'm an advisory member, but I can suggest something that you guys do that and that you could bring it back to us and that we send it to mayor and council in form of a motion that says, we hear you have a budget surplus. Consider giving us some of this stuff we really need that's in the long range plan that people have talked about for years. So give us a little extra money and see what they say. I mean, if you don't ask for anything, you don't get anything.
Hey, Colby.
Hey, Brian.
To that idea, I'd like to make a motion that we, the Transit Task Force, ask that the mayor and council commit to not cutting bus service. Even if it means adding additional dollars to the transit budget.
I don't want to second that because I think it's premature. It's a little bit negative, meaning that we should make the assumption they're not going to do that. We have the budget itself won't be adopted until May. We're only in February.
Yeah, but it's getting done now. It'll get rubber stamped in May.
It certainly gets rubber stamped in May. You're absolutely right about that. But in April is when the real negotiations are. So I would like us to hold that thought until the following month. I would rather see us put forward a whole bunch of carrots to them. I mean, we're talking about what does it say in more Saturday and Sunday services. I would like to see also, we've talked a lot about communication, when the bus is going to come, better bus places, bus stations, bus stops, and other things like that, which would make the service appear more attractive.
Yeah, I agree with Margo, and I think you could develop a list that includes what you moved, Brian, but it also includes these other things.
More aesthetics.
And if we do that at next month's meeting.
Okay, so put it on the agenda for next month's meeting.
Should somebody say that they'll write what you just said, the weekend hours? Can you make a short list?
I could bring a motion next month that has those things in it, sure.
Okay, so that sounds cool.
So we have a motion, so you have to withdraw your motion.
It had no second, so it dies.
Well, no, it didn't, because he never called for a second.
Yeah, it didn't die yet.
He's the chair. He never called for it. So I would be willing to, you think it'd be a good idea
to withdraw it?
Okay, I'll withdraw that. And And next month we'll deal with it, right?
Yeah. We have some numbers.
Though the timing on it, we need to be proactive right this minute, not in March, April.
It doesn't preclude any of us from contacting the people who represent.
True.
Who represent.
Yeah, that's the real issue.
Represent us.
I get
we represent them.
Appointers, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Eric?
A couple of months ago, we were talking about how some city employees get a $25, I guess it's a, for a parking space part of the budget. One thing we should probably look at asking for is, maybe City of Tucson should put in for a whole monthly pass for all employees that were going to use it, not necessarily for anybody that requested it as compared to what they could do. I think that's something to consider for next month. But I guess my question was for SunTran. I know the bus drivers know how to get on buses, but does SunTran have any ride thing for their employees that are driving the buses? I mean,
yeah, they all ride at no cost with their.
Just show ID and you're good?
Yeah. Yeah, we've been working with the city on a program to offer discounted or free transportation to city employees, and it's all kind of connected with the whole parking issue and improving other mobility options. So hopefully,
The city of Tucson should offer it to all employees that would actually use it. I mean, because right now there's obviously in that policy we're showing police and fire can't have it. Or maybe some police officer wants to ride in his uniform or bus because he doesn't want to ride his car and get it vandalized at his station every year. There could be really a lot of potential growth in that for more riders.
There are police officers who only just sit in their offices because police employees.
Right. I mean, the dispatcher, they can't get it, the $25 parking guy, because they're quote, police officer employee, but they might want to ride the bus, so you might actually get a lot more.
We already offer. We do offer already, right, a discount for all city employees.
The policy said it was police and fireworks Pluto that we were shown at the last meeting 2 months ago. Human resources doesn't allow TFD or TPD or its employees to have a discounted parking space.
Direct employees. Brian.
Want to go first?
So
Eric made the point, and your thing was like, hey man, we're working on it. I'd like to see it next meeting or whatever, if it's not too, I want to see something. Can you bring in a proposal? And we should recommend it to mayor and council, right? It's all about that ridership, Can you bring something in?
If you agendize something.
What exactly are you asking? I'm confused.
Eric's question is like
a wish list?
Specifically, that all the city employees get free passes or however you word it.
If they're going to use them, we don't want. We don't want the city of Tucson buying the mayor a pass if she has a car,
Or whatever.
Right, but anybody. It could be start with the city, next year hit Pima County. Get it going so that it's just everybody has access to the bus system.
So it sounds like, that's part of the, we had talked about incentivizing for city employees. And so we could have an update on that. But it's part of, but it's kind of separate from the budget discussion. I can see that being folded into the budget discussion. So my bigger question is, will we have a detailed kind of, here's what we're going to be asking in our first ask.
Yeah.
Are we going to have anything like that next month? Because I feel like that's, and with Margo's, if we're going to have kind of a draft motion to come back, I feel like we need a number to tie that.
I can provide you with more concrete and better laid out presentation of the budget. It's just that
I think the point we want to avoid is if April is when we're down to brass tacks negotiation, we don't want to be at March is the only time that we see the number. We get kind of one shot at looking at it. We'd like to have as early as possible so we can have input and change it.
Yeah. We can come back with something that's, it's a lot more finalized, right? And it's much more accurate and definitely can bring you something that's better.
And in my mind, if you look at the enabling legislation, that's the one thing that's really clearly spelled out for this group, is that's what we're supposed to provide input as on the budget. So in my mind, even if it means a second meeting in March that just looks at budget, if that's what we need to do, then we need to do it, because that should be one of our primary tasks. So.
So you don't want an update, is what I'm hearing. You want a plan, a concrete.
Well, I mean,
plan,
if it's preliminary numbers, that's fine. But then we need to have a look at the real numbers when they're ready, and as the earliest possible date, so that we're reviewing that and giving input, and we're not just kind of at the end of it and it's too late to make any change.
Right.
That's what I want to avoid. Yeah.
I think by the next meeting we would have something that is pretty solid.
Okay.
Yeah, that we can go.
And then we can figure out if that's
and if we're
fine or not.
You know, I don't want to make too many promises.
Sure.
But I think we're on the right path.
Okay.
Yeah.
So and then, we can decide there if we need to schedule another meeting or kind of where we're at in the process.
I have a budget question. Does SunTrain know what money is lost due to ticketing machine errors and problems with the SunGo system? Because I was on the SunLink a month ago, and it was down, and I had added money to my card, and it wasn't reading my thing, so I couldn't even pay for my ride. And then it was during the street fair. So like lots of people were using SunLink and no one was having to pay for it because just no one could. Is there any guesstimate of how much is lost for that happening?
You know, that's a really good question. There are issues with the machines, as with any technology, and there's also issues with the Passport app. And you know, trying to get a handle on revenue capture is one of those things I think we need to work on, which is one of the reasons Diana wanted to create this subcommittee, was to start to get a handle on just exactly, you know, what is happening when you start having issues with these.
Because I feel like the Festival of Books in March would be another, like,
pardon me?
The Festival of Books that happens in March would be another opportunity,
right,
to see. Like at capacity, like moments like that, like with the street fair, where you, how much you're losing versus how many people are actually paying. Like if you were to have people, I mean, because I don't know if you have people who count people on. Is that how you do it? You.
Well, we have automated passenger counters on all our vehicles, so we know how many people get on through the door.
And you can compare that.
And
to
then
how
we kind
paid.
Of match that up on SunTrain. We match it up with the fare box revenue on SunLink, we've only got the.
Oh.
So we don't actually.
So there's no way to count people.
So it's really hard, unless you get people on the buses making sure everybody taps every trip. But what happens is you start to match the number of taps with the number of people that get on. You get a sense. You start to get a sense of what you're missing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the challenges, though, also is if you ride, some people get on. And they just know I've got my pass. They just don't tap it. Other people have an app, like, and they haven't activated it, or they don't have a pass at all. So part of the issue is, you know, that every time somebody gets on and doesn't tap, it's not always somebody that's not paying the fare. Some people have already bought their semester pass, for instance, but they just don't bother to tap it. So that's part of the challenge.
Do people ride free on the streetcar per capita more than the fixed routes?
Probably, I would guess, because the drivers on the buses are
right there.
Right there, yeah. It's like.
Yeah, and when
so it's a lot easier. But see, the issue, Brian, is that I've got my ID. Every time I get on a bus, I'm going to tap it.
Yeah.
But I get on the streetcar. I may not, because I'm at the wrong end, or it's crowded, or I sit down, and because I'm not going right by it. So some of the times that we don't get a tap doesn't mean they don't have the fare. It just means they didn't walk the 30 feet to hit the validator. So that's what we've got to study.
Okay.
Yes. One more question on the budget. We didn't really look at the SunLink down there, and I noticed the money coming in from RTA. Get that again next year, or is this our last year?
Is that one more year?
I think we've got one more year on that. I'll double check.
Yeah, I had another budget question. So you said that a big, huge part of the budget is personnel, wages, right?
Uh-huh.
So what's the status of labor negotiations?
They're going to happen this spring.
In the spring? They haven't started yet? Do you have any editorial comment on it?
They're going to happen this spring.
Can't do more than that?
Misty and I work on it.
Can I ask them, do you have any input on it? Was there going to be a strike?
There's been no date set at this time.
Okay. Well, premature.
Yeah, okay. But it's a big issue, though.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
It needs to be dealt with.
Yeah, if you look at me. Okay. Wrapping up the budget discussion. Okay, next item is, thank you all very much for good stuff, and we'll continue this discussion at the following meetings and see where we get. Good. So next item is call to the audience again. Mr. Benz, I'll let him go.
One thing, you were talking about the passes for city employees. I left the city in 2004, and while all the time that I was employed by the city, all 25 years of it, we got 50% off on our pass, but this particular city ID card and they would run a your regular pass, but they don't want you to have half price there. I don't know what it's been in the last 15, 16 years, but that's what it was there. The other thing on this Move Tucson survey that's coming up and is out or whatever. There is, I took that today, and on there they have an interactive ongoing vote tally there, and I pulled it up here, and there's like, so far there's like almost 500 respondents that have taken the survey. And one of the questions is, how frequently do you want to use the following transportation options to travel around the city? 55% say they'd like to walk more, and then down here, using a bus, streetcar, or other public transit, they 25% said that they would like to use the bus more, transit more frequently, daily. 25% said that. 22% said a few times a week. 27% a few times a month, and they don't want the carpool, and they typically get there in a car or a truck, but they'd rather use transit there so far. So that gives you some sort of an idea of what the people that are taking this survey are thinking as of right now. The other thing, there's this thing about this Move Tucson event that's supposed to be Wednesday, but there seems to be a bit of confusion, at least in some people's minds, as to whether it's going to be at TEP headquarters or at the Fox Theater. In the newspaper, it says it's going to be at the Fox Theater.
Fox Theater.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Did you have anything, Miss?
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
The articulated bus is going to be back out on the road on the 16th. I know you guys are talking about the electric buses, but the articulated bus seems to be like a dead issue right here. Mm-hmm. We need articulated buses. They do fill up, and I'll be having one back out there on the next bid for South 6th Avenue.
Do you know, is it a diesel or CNG bus, the one that we have?
Diesel.
Okay.
It's an older bus.
Okay. We got it from some other place,
yeah,
right?
Phoenix.
Okay. Okay, that's a good one.
It's not being used, Steve, right now?
Yeah, you know, it's an older bus, and so it's had some mechanical issues. The other problem is that we only have one, so sometimes it takes a minute for the guys to figure out just how to get them fixed. The nice thing about the articulated bus is that as you have ridership, we're able to serve more people and more efficiently. And when you're running buses every 15 minutes, sometimes you just can't run any more frequently without them bumping into each other.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, the 18.
So when you got the articulated bus, if I recall right, you said it was, I mean, obviously it's like a test the first time Tucson's done it, and that's fine. But I thought you said that if you liked it, if everybody liked it, the operators, everybody, that then you might get more. And I guess, did I understand or forget or get it mixed up that Phoenix had more of those same buses they were ready to retire? Or
they do.
So what did you decide?
Well, I don't know that we've been able to use it enough. I mean, I think it's a big benefit, and there are areas that we could deploy it. I think we do have to be kind of thoughtful about when we're going to get them, because part of the challenge is that they're really expensive. So you got to make sure you got a program to replace them. But we've had, how long has it been down? I mean, it's been a while.
I didn't see it all summer.
Yeah.
All summer and all fall.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah, I think it's been down the last 6-8 months.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Had some issues.
Okay.
Yeah, any other spring it was every day you'd see it on top.
Yep.
Any other call to the audience? Anyone else? Yes.
Okay. She did some research. Yes.
Oh, good.
Okay. Now I went to the electric bus presentation down with Pete.
Yep.
I took my walk and I talked to some gentleman, some tram passers on her something. But anyway, I was told, and the news also said it was $3.2 million. Was still going to sponsor the charging stations, okay, and the charging stations are going to go and probably the North Yard or something, what they say. Okay. And is it all grant money for the 5 buses? And I was also told that the electric buses were supposed to go 150 miles, which would pretty much cover a route. But there was no guarantee on that. So I was kind of curious about that. And because I used to be a driver, I drove for the most part of 30 years. So now I just got my car. But anyway, I mean, it's really a bummer being a driver and breaking down. And I have the power or the CNG to run it on a run. I mean, sitting there and I have to check the weather, the car, no nothing, and the mechanic doing the CNG or something. So it's just a bummer to break down. Those are my concerns.
Okay. Thank you. Rhett, for when we talk budget next time, can we have a kind of a clear indication of the pilot electric and these five kind of where the money's coming
the
from?
Sure.
Yeah, just so we have a clear of how much of that is grant and how much is coming out of the budget, just to, so we don't get bogged down with that.
You bet.
Thank you. Okay, I think that's it. So we're for future agenda items. Alex, I think you had something for that?
Oh, yeah. So you're still assembling the now is a subcommittee on the SunGo system, correct? Will there be more info for the next meeting, or will we be able to talk about or suggest what they should be talking about and or looking into?
Yeah, I hope to have the scope figured out by the next meeting.
Okay,
and a schedule.
So if she has, can she send something to you in the meantime to kind of run up the flagpole and see if that can be included in the scope?
Well, and I've mentioned it before, I think it's not a very functional, pass system, because I've used it, I wanted to ride, and I couldn't even pay for my ride. And then when I called for help about it, they're like, that's just how it is. I was just like, okay. So, that to me has more to do with, I don't know what a subcommittee would even do with that. It'd be almost like you'd have to hire someone to design a system on the back end that worked better than what it currently does. And it doesn't seem like a subcommittee would even be able to address anything like that. I don't know.
I think you're going to look at, my understanding was you're going
to understand those kind of things.
Yeah, yeah. And look at what other systems you use around the country.
Right,
and, yeah. So I think that's part of what they'll look at. Yeah, and I mean, they don't necessarily have to get into they don't have to be computer engineers to know that, but to at least talk about the experience on the front end and what's the best way to fix that.
Yeah, because the public isn't necessarily aware of issues on the back end, right? So issues with the vendors, mm-hmm. issues with the cost of replacing the system, how archaic, all these different things that we're going to look at. We're going to probably, I don't know, I imagine we'll go over the system with the members of the subcommittee, talk about its pitfalls, do a SWOT analysis, maybe look at some case studies from around the country, look at how much it would cost to replace it wholesale, how much it would cost to replace it in pieces, is that even possible, all those different things we'll be looking at.
So the SunGo system is on both the bus and the streetcar?
Yep.
You know, a really good protest would be that to go to everybody on the 18 and tell them, you guys don't have to pay because you don't have to pay on the streetcar. On the 18, you don't have to pay either. You know, we'll talk about the economy.
make our budget even harder to get out of next year, though.
Yeah. I don't know, man. They're not paying on the streetcar.
So for next time, we're looking at budget again.
Yep.
Maybe if there's an update on the City of Tucson incentive program, just kind of where we're at on that.
Okay.
Subcommittee. And then the subcommittee, and then vacancies, maybe we'll have some movement on that. Maybe, we'll see.
Yeah, I think we should.
Okay.
And hopefully a report from the city attorney and
and
the city clerk on the people who are also Teamsters being allowed to.
And then the Ronstadt update, depending on when Ann thinks that it may not be next month, but just kind of keep it on the list.
I mean, I can have that as a standing staff update item.
And then Eric Kidwell?
A wish list, possible.
Okay.
So I suggest that I will try to put the wish list together and I guess send it to Chris, or maybe to you. And so you can put some price tags on it.
This is your wish list, the committee's wish list, right?
Yes. Yeah, I want to...
Just to be clear, because it sounded like you were asking if we had one.
I was asking if the City of Tucson, if you got, the budget was $50 million this year, if somehow you got it up to 53.
So in my mind, the wish list is there's the long range transit plan, and then there's the mobility master plan that's being developed. Those to me are the wish list, because those will have gone through a broader public input and process rather than six people sitting, or even though we're.
Extra $2 million this year instead of doing this bus stop in 2022 through 2021. What would you guys do if you had more funding? That's all I'm asking.
Yeah.
And again, based on those, that's what you have.
Maybe it's a more rapid, accurate. Yeah, if there's things that you're planning on 3 and 4 years down the road, if you had extra money, could you do those more quickly as opposed to delaying deferred cost or capital or that kind of stuff?
I think it's a mixture, Colby. Yeah. It's stuff that gets drawn from the long-range plan, but you know, not everything's in the long-range plan because there's certain assumptions. You're always doing certain things.
Yeah.
And in those certain things, sometimes need more money, too. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay.
I hope there'll be a report on the workshop on Wednesday night as well as the Is it a retreat they're having on Saturday for 6 hours or something?
In the Park Tucson Conference Room. I'm going to be locked in that room when it's going to be gorgeous outside. Yep. Okay. Anything else? Meeting adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Thanks. Yeah, are you going to that booth then?
This is up for grads.
On Wednesday? Yes. I'll be there.
Staff, SunTran folks.
Maybe you can.
Interested.
Well, he's our official person, but I mean, the rest of us can join.
Take a look at this again, too.
Yeah.